I wanted to write a book that covered in a comprehensive way all the different economic news that can come out and that can affect the price of an asset, so the value of an asset. And yeah, it's just released. Actually, yesterday, the paper book was became available on Amazon.
Welcome to a new episode of Most Memorable Journeys. A very fascinating guest today. She does a lot of things, and I sometimes wonder how she manages to do them all. She started off, from what I believe, in journalism, but then she became a jazz and blues singer. She's a painter. She's a content creator. She is the author of the book, The Light Walker. But then when I went into Amazon, I found other books that she published. So let's just find out more about her. Welcome to Most Memorable Journeys, Sarah Fenwick.
Thank you very much for having me, Elizabeth. It's wonderful to be here with you.
So we were on a panel together, or I was moderating the panel about the Cyprus diaspora and about your book, because you were on the literature panel. But, you know, just talking about the Cyprus diaspora and how Cypriots are spread all over the world. You were not born in Cyprus either, were you?
No, my father is English and my mother was a Greek Cypriot. And they happened to be in Kenya when I was born. They both loved traveling. For the first about 8-10 years of my life, we were on the road, as it were, in Kenya. Then we moved to Grand Cayman Islands in the West Indies. And I was brought up traveling around and adapting to the different cultures and countries that we were in at the time.
Do you remember any of these times? How far does your memory go back?
My memory goes back to the West Indies. I don't remember Kenya. We left when I was 3. But I distinctly remember the West Indies and the color of the sea there, the mangoes on the trees, because there were mango trees scattered around the area that we were living in. And coming home covered in mango juice and my mother being rather displeased.
Hosing you down with the garden hose.
Yeah, they don't come out.
So I always wonder about one thing, because it just occurred to me now, but your mother was Cypriot, your father was English. Do you believe that when the parents are mixed, that the mother's influence is stronger on the child's, I don't know, mentality, maybe not, but character?
Well, that's a fascinating question. I've never actually thought about it, and I think it's something to think about. I do believe that the Cypriot culture has a very strong religious aspect to it. So the Greek Orthodox is a rather powerful influence in society. And I do remember going to become baptized. Because by the time we got to Cyprus after our travels, I was older. And also at the same time, I do remember this sort of pull and push between the two sides of my culture, in the sense that the Cypriot side was more expressive, more emotional, I would say, and the English side was more reserved. And I mean, now we're talking generalizations, but this was sort of the feeling that I had, that there were sort of a hot and cool side to my multicultural backgrounds.
Yeah, this is interesting, because I actually just thought of it, because my children grew up, I'm from Switzerland and my husband is from Cyprus and I live here. So you do sort of, you know, I always try to respect and celebrate the Cypriot the church and whatever else. But I also was, for me, it was very, very important that my children had a Swiss side, and I only spoke to them in Swiss German, and they both are fluent. I mean, you can't hear that they didn't grow up in Switzerland. So there, it's an interesting mixture. I think multicultural children are, I don't know, a little different to children who were born to two parents of the same country.
Well, the language point is very important. The language, growing up with two languages, was a distinct advantage. My father is an English teacher and a translator, and he encourage us to learn languages, because this is kind of the key to adapting to wherever you go and being able to speak to people in their own language, to be able to understand what they're trying to tell you and to be able to communicate. So this was sort of instilled in us from the beginning. And it was very useful to learn Greek, because Greek is such a rich language that it informs many, many other languages, especially English. So I would say it's a very good experience to have a multicultural background. And it also informs my decision to be a jazz singer, because jazz is multicultural and it does encourage opening up to other cultures, to other sounds, and to other ways of hearing music.
Yeah, and I think just music connects people without actually needing to speak the language. But I absolutely agree with your dad. I think it's very important to learn languages, because when you learn a language, you don't just learn the language, you also learn the culture of a place. Now, let's fast forward a little bit. I have a memory about you. I don't remember when it was. It was in the 90s, and you were working at Sigma, as far as I remember. And there was a show. Was it called The Money Show?
That was called The Money Show, yes.
And I was invited to come and talk about personalized children's books, and I remember that. How long did you do television?
I've been doing television since my career began, actually. I worked Sigma Live was one of my first jobs as a professional journalist, and that lasted about a year and a half, I believe. But from then on, I was involved in productions in one way or the other, either as a producer or as somebody who was a guest, in one way or the other. I mean, for example, I produced a music video for Sony and in Cyprus. So the experience of being in television is sort of an extension of all of the aspects of the work that I do. It's a very important part of communicating with the audience. And that shifted quite a bit from mainstream television into then the internet at the beginning of the 2000s or so, when the internet became the dominant form, began to be the dominant form of mass communications. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating, because you also wrote, but I don't know when you wrote that book, but I found this book called Digital Marketing for Musicians.
I wrote that in 2022.
Okay, that's recent then. That's,
yes.
What does it mean, digital marketing for musicians?
So since the breakup of the music industry from a few large record labels into disparate smaller, let's say, units of marketing, recruiting and promoting musicians. Musicians have had to become more independent in their promotions, be able to at least evaluate if a company is doing the right job for them or do it themselves. And I wrote that book to kind of put the power into musicians' hands if they want to read the book and see how marketing works on the internet. And sort of come with their own ideas of how to do that, so that best expresses themselves. And this actually grew out of my 2017 experience when we started Sarah's Jazz Club in Nicosia. And Sarah's Jazz Club, I realized that the musicians didn't actually understand much about promoting themselves. Luckily, I had the knowledge and I was able to support their communications with various bits of advice here and there. But I mean, I realized that as Sarah's Jazz Club, we would have to do the promotions for the musicians, and mostly since the musicians didn't have the experience themselves and weren't trained. And indeed, to an extent, I can understand it, because they have to spend a lot of time practicing their instruments. It's very demanding to be a high-level instrumentalist or high-level singer. So in a way, why should they market themselves? My argument is the reason that they should market themselves is because it's not always going to be available to them for somebody else to market themselves. And they need to be aware of how important it is to communicate to the audience, not only when they're performing, but at all the other times as well. Since there is a lot of competition in music world, the structure of the industry has changed quite a lot. So having the independent knowledge is very important, I believe.
It definitely is. And it also is available. I mean, we are not a victim anymore of you know, depending on somebody else. There is a lot of stuff available, and it really is up to us to use it.
Absolutely. Yeah. There is a lot of information out there. But I think I heard sort of a calling to write that book, because I said to myself, well, I do have a background in mass communications. It's something I studied. It's something that I experienced through my career. I do have the other side as well, which is the experience as a musician. So somewhere where I could share my knowledge. And as far as I understood, for the people who have given me feedback on their experience of reading the book, it's been helpful, because they've understood that Facebook, for example, is not just a place to keep in contact with band members and network with other musicians. It's also a place where their audience is. It's a place where journalists are. It's a place where television stations are. It's a place where their fans are. So Facebook on its own is a center of mass communications. Mm-hmm. LinkedIn is a center of mass communications, but on a business level, so business to business. Yeah. It's just a shift in consciousness. It's a shift in how you think about social media.
Yeah.
I think about it as
a place where opportunities are, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because if you don't use the exposure, nobody's going to know about you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And
opportunities
I think
there.
It's up to us how much and in which way we want to expose ourselves in a way. I've also noticed I don't know if it's a book, but you write about finance.
Yes, I do.
Where does that come from? I mean, you definitely are a very, very multifaceted lady. I mean, we haven't even reached the painting side yet. Where does the finance come in?
So, writing about finance, actually, I was triggered by my first job in television as a
money show.
Right, the Money Show. So that sort of got me thinking, because I learned a lot from people. And like yourself, people also who work in the financial markets directly, how integral the financial aspect and the economy is to every single individual's life. I've been writing about finance. I've been writing about the foreign exchange markets, the investment markets. I did actually a year in Switzerland, in Zurich, where I was a financial correspondent for what turned into Thomson Reuters. I actually started in AFX News, and then it sort of was bought and merged with different companies. So that was fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And my latest book is actually called Understand Forex Trading News. Because a lot of people go into the trading markets. I believe there's around 10 million traders at the moment who are essentially taking their financial lives into their own hands. They're trading themselves. They're not going through a third party. That's the old model was you paid somebody to do it for you. The new model seems to be you do it for yourself through one of these online companies that you can open an account in. The thing is, though, the other aspect of it is the intense drama that an economy can trigger when things go wrong. When things go right, people think that it can never go wrong.
Yeah.
You know, when it's on an upcycle, then everyone's like, oh, everything's perfect. Everything is going wonderfully. But the economic cycle usually turns. And I wanted to write a book that covered in a comprehensive way all the different economic news that can come out and that can affect the price of an asset, so the value of an asset. And yeah, it's just released. Actually, yesterday, the paper book was became available on Amazon. And the Kindle version has been available for about a month or so. And it's a reference book, similar to Digital Marketing for Musicians. It's a reference book, an introduction, a comprehensive introduction for people who are thinking about trading or people who have a lot to do with foreign exchange. For example, if somebody who travels a lot and changes currencies all the time. And I guess, you know, what I found in Switzerland was that this knowledge is quite widespread. It's sort of second nature to the Swiss that I spoke to understand economies and currencies. But that's not the case in a lot of other countries, I think. So I'm hoping this book is going to help open some eyes.
Brilliant. We're going to put the link to your website in the show notes where everything that we are talking about here can be found. Most Memorable Journeys is the podcast. So let's move a little bit to journeys, to traveling. Mm-hmm. Do you travel still? Do you travel more like you used to? Or because you were born a kind of a gypsy, weren't you, with your parents taking you here and there and everywhere. Do you still like traveling?
I like traveling inwardly these days. I do enjoy being in new environments, and it's part of my nature, and it's very inspiring to me. But one thing I realized is that we're traveling all the time. The Earth turns at 66,620 miles per hour. So since we started the podcast, talking about on the podcast, we've traveled more than the area of Russia. It's turning
all
the time, you know. And so I've sort of drifted into the internal journeys, and perhaps going over my past experiences, going through ideas that I have about nature, about the universe, and using it to come up with book ideas. And because I spend a lot of time alone as a writer, this is by choice, and it's for me a very wonderful thing to not exactly be isolated, but to be solitary and have the attention on my thoughts, and especially when I'm editing something, which takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of concentration.
And it's also
I suppose that's one answer.
Liking your own company, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's lots of people in this world who cannot be by themselves, and I usually think it's maybe because they don't like themselves enough to spend time alone.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But going back to the time when you did travel, what would be your most memorable journey? Do you have one that you can think of? Is there a favorite place in your life that you sort of think of fondly when you go inside yourself?
Good question. Also something I've never thought about. I love sort of cycling back to places. And coming back to a place where I've been to before, but with a more mature perspective, a different mood at the time. So it's a process of nostalgia in a way, which I think connects with my artistic approach to observing and documenting my environment, and being as a painter, being able to look at it over time and seeing how it changes in my eyes. And also as a jazz singer, jazz is nostalgic. It is repeating old songs in a new way, let's say, in a way that you're feeling at the time. I do like revisiting physical locations as well, and sort of tracking and mapping my response, my reaction to the new experience, as is holding the old experience and integrating it with the new feeling, let's say. I don't know where that ends up, that train of thought. I have a lot of trains of thought.
We don't know, because you're living in Germany at the moment.
Yeah.
But before you were in Cyprus, what does Cyprus mean? What is Cyprus for you?
Cyprus is it was my home for 30 years. it's not my home anymore, but it's my very treasured place. It's a place of many memories. It's a place of many experiences as well, as is Germany, actually, because I traveled quite a lot between Cyprus and Germany through my life, in fact. So they're both very familiar, well-loved places. I have not been back to Kenya, which is sort of on my bucket list, I suppose, to do. England, as being the other side of my cultural heritage, is a place where I do love to visit as well. So I suppose the overwhelming emotion is love for these places and for the people I've met and the experiences I've had.
But you are a crazy mixture. I mean, when you mention all these things, it's hard to satisfy all those or you know, to use all those influences, and fascinating at the same time. What brought you to painting? When did you start painting?
I started painting around 5 years ago. I had the urge to paint. I think that it was sort of the result of a car accident that I had, where I had a head injury. Having never thought of being a professional painter before, suddenly I had this very, very strong urge and desire to pick up a paintbrush. Unfortunately, I had no idea what I was doing. So the results were mixed. However, I did do what is part of my artistic process as a jazz singer and as a writer. I shared it in public. I shared it on Facebook. And luckily for me, a very, very good artist called Ellie Lestas saw my work, and she got in touch with me and she said, "Have you ever taken an art course?" And I said, "Well, no." And she said, I'm surprised to hear that, but if you ever want to, then let's work together." And I made the very, very good decision to work with Ellie Lestas, and she taught me the basics of art. And we did what ended up to be a sort of foundation course. And after that, I was well away. You know, I had the tools in my hands. I was absolutely delighted to see some of the paintings that I was producing approach what I wanted to do. So yeah, that's still in progress. I think that's any art. You're always learning. You're always improving. You can never believe that you're the perfect artist and you've reached some kind of height. Never, ever believe that, because that is actually the very place where you stop creating something interesting, I think.
When you think you know it all.
There's always going to be something left to learn, always.
So this is very interesting what you're saying about the painting, because me personally, I do lots of stuff, but one thing that I definitely do not know how to do is draw or paint. Do you think anybody can learn? Absolutely. You need talent? Anybody can learn?
No. This is not a matter of talent. This is a matter of skill. And anyone can learn a skill if they're motivated enough. Where a talent is actually getting in touch with yourself and saying, "What do I want to say? What do I want to express to other people? What do I want to communicate to them?" But learning how to draw, learning how to paint, everyone can do it. Everyone, because if I can do it, everyone can do it. And that is that. I'm not, you know, humble bragging or something here that is a common thing that happens. I'm not humble bragging. That is a fact. I had no clue. No clue.
Very interesting. Very interesting. The last thing we're in half an hour in, but the last thing that I do want to talk to you about is actually the book. That's why we were sort of reconnected recently on the Diaspora panel. The Light Walker. How did the Light Walker come about? What is the story? Or how much can you say? Don't tell us everything, because we want people to buy it.
The Light Walker is the story of Alex, who is a child prodigy, a Cypriot child prodigy, a mathematician whose mathematical skills are so prodigious that the British government recruits him to become part of their code breaker department, GCHQ. And they recruit him because it's set at the time of the colonial rebellions that happened through the British Empire at the time in the 1950s, 1960s, and so on. And that is the beginning of his story. His story goes many directions. And of course, I'm not going to give any spoilers. But what I want to say is that magical realism, which is the genre I chose, is taking a look at an event in history, for example, and finding some synchronicities, some hope, if you want, in the story of a conflict, in the story of a country, in the story of a character in a country. This is what I love about magical realism, and I hope that comes across to people who read it.
Great, great. Now, what is next for Sarah Fenwick? You do so many things. What are you going to concentrate on? And that's one question I'm going to ask two at the same time. You're a content creator. So if somebody wants content, they could get in touch with you and you could kind of, from what I understand, you know so many things, you could probably create anything.
I'm concentrating at this point on writing books and on painting and also on my financial content creation. This is in the form of articles, for example. I also write for financial websites, for companies in the payment sector, in the foreign exchange sector, this kind of thing, even in the banking sector. So I do sort of analytical articles that are based on economic news. So this is a sort of business part of things for me. And as far as the artistic side is concerned, I'm studying currently on a master's course for creative writing, because I want to improve my creative writing and really get the skills to underpin future books that I'm going to be writing.
You are doing that now. You're doing that master course now.
Yes.
So you do agree with me that one should never stop learning.
Absolutely. Lifelong learning. And the educational model is adapting a bit slowly, but it's adapting to the new era of internet communications. So I'm doing this whole course online, which is actually working out very successfully. We have the same class spirit, even more so because people don't miss classes. They can attend them when they happen, even if they have full-time jobs and so on. So this is a very, very good thing. If we stop learning, I believe we begin dying, because life is for refreshing our minds, neuroplasticity of the brain. It needs constant new information to adapt to integrate into our own experiences and to keep interested in life.
Yeah, and it needs stimulation. And also, yeah. I think in today's world, with what we have available, there is no more excuse not to be informed or not to learn something new. A lot of it is even available for free. You know, not even saying that I don't have the financial means is an excuse, because there is a lot that we can use for free. And I think that's the upside, because of course all this internet stuff and all this, as we said, exposure can have a downside. But I think that's what life is all about, isn't it? Just making the best of what we have.
Absolutely. Well, we as human beings, we are not, I believe, as adaptable as the natural world around us. I mean, I was watching a blackbird the other day, and she is building a nest, and she landed in the back of in the yard, and she picked up leaves, and she never took her eye off the environment. She was checking all the time. Yeah, she was doing her thing because she was learning her environment. She knows that her environment changes every second, and she was keeping an eye on it, you know. And I think that's what education does to us as part of the natural world. We keep ourselves alive, we keep ourselves alert and interested and stimulated, as you said, by learning. And I don't think that anyone can not learn how to paint. I don't think that anyone can learn how to paint. They can learn how to write. They can learn how to do their own financial management. You know, it's all out there now. The internet, mm-hmm. it's a huge resource.
I think that's a good end to this podcast episode. If you really want to do something, you go and get it. And we all can. I think that is how we are going to end it. Thank you so much for being on Most Memorable Journey, Sarah Fenwick.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth, for inviting me.
If you enjoy my podcast, please like, share, and subscribe to my channel. You will find all the information in the show notes.